I'll call to order a meeting of the House Judiciary Committee for Friday, March 16th, 2007. We've got two work sessions and then a public hearing set, and I'm going to take them, actually reverse the order. We're going to go directly to the public hearing on House Bill 2768 and do the work sessions after that's concluded. So I'll now open a public hearing on House Bill 2768. Council Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, as the committee, House Bill 2768 comes to you from Representative Garrard and Representative Olson. Allows the creation of a special service district for the purposes of providing sheriff services. Allows the sheriff of the county to initiate the petition for sheriff services. Requires the sheriff's petition for sheriff services district to state the petition is filed pursuant to particular statutes. Designates principal of each act affected district. States the nature of the proposal. States whether the territory subject to the petition is inhabited or uninhabited. States the number of board members, if the board members are elected, and several other things.
Thank you, Council. Representative Olson, do you want to come forward and introduce this, or do you want to bring anybody with you? Or?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Andy Olson, and I'm State Representative from House District 15 in the Albany area. I do consider it an honor and privilege to be in front of this committee this morning on Friday, and thank you very much for moving this quickly for me. House Bill 2768 comes to you on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. This legislation makes a small but important change in the existing service district law. House Bill 2768 provides the following. Adds sheriff services to the list of services districts that may be created in ORS 451. The law already provides for law enforcement services. However, the sheriff provides several services such as search and rescue, civil responsibilities, and court security that may be in addition to what is considered law enforcement. House Bill 2768 allows the sheriff to petition under ORS 198 for the creation of a service district. The bill does not reduce the authority or requirements of the county commissioner or the voters of a county. In January 2007, earlier this year, several county commissioners met and testified before the House Committee on Revenue, which I'm part of. And the impact, and they shared with us at that time the impact of what the timber revenue throughout their respective counties has done for them. And for example, Lane County Sheriff's Office is anticipating a layoff of 115 deputies here as a result of that. Josephine County will have to reduce 24-hour coverage to one deputy. And there are many other stories throughout the state as well. But the point being here is that the commissioners were seeking help from us in revenue to discuss the possibility of developing other tools to help the counties with the loss of their revenue. And I see this bill as a tool to help counties with their specific budgets. Dennis Dotson is the sheriff of Lincoln County, Newport, Oregon. He's seated immediately to my right, and he's been very instrumental in developing the concept of this bill, and he's also going to give you a little bit more information regarding it. I appreciate your time hearing this bill, and I hope you will strongly consider adding another tool into the toolbox for the counties by moving this bill to the floor. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. And in case there are questions of you, and I know you have a busy schedule, so let me see if the committee has any questions. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson, for being here today. In your testimony, you say that the bill does not reduce the authority or requirements of the county commissioner or the voters of a county. And I'm trying to understand how this works, because that seems to be inconsistent with something that we got from Washington County that says that the bill would allow the sheriff's office to bypass the process of collecting signatures in support of the tax increase. And so I'm trying to understand, can you explain how this, in your opinion, does not reduce the authority or requirements of the county commissioner?
But I do want just, Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, it does not. I don't think what's happened here is the county commissioners clearly understand the concept here. What it does is it does give authority for the sheriff to move forward in the initiative process by developing a concept, but still under the Measure 5 issue for compression and everything, they still have to get the authority and the approval through the county commissioners. It's just that, you know, I'll just stop there, but go ahead, John.
Mr. Chairman, may I answer the question?
Please.
As well? My name is John Powell. I represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Excuse my voice today. It's a little different than normal. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and Representative Bonamici, I could answer that question, I think, quite clearly by reading two paragraphs from one from the Washington County letter and one from an analysis of county council that Representative Krieger shared with me from his district. And if I may read, Mr. Chairman, just briefly, quoting from the Washington County letter, quote, "The Washington County Board of Commissioners opposes House Bill 2768. We believe the Board of Commissioners, after weighing all the needs of the county, should retain the authority to decide what tax measures are sent to the voters," end quote. In the analysis of county council that Representative Krieger shared with me, I quote from their council, "The other laws about formation would be unchanged. So the governing body would hold a hearing, apply standards of formation, and approve, modify, or reject the petition. If it is approved and a permanent rate limit is sought, the county board would hold an election," end quote. I think that answers the question. It doesn't change anything that's in the law today. The bill makes two changes. On page 2, line 9, it adds sheriff's services to the list of service districts. The other change dealing with the petition gathering is on page 3, line 21 through 26, and thereby allows the sheriff, who is a countywide elected official, to be the petitioner. And, you know, that piece is there simply because in reality, how this would work is the sheriff would be working with the county board, not bypassing the county board, and would allow them to expedite this process should they agree. It would be foolhardy for a sheriff to go forward with a petition knowing full well that the county board was going to oppose it. So I think Sheriff Dotson will cover what he would consider the partnership here in the long run. And I think there is a lot of misunderstanding in the ranks of the counties, and I don't know how they got the information about this bill, but I don't think it's from reading it.
Thank you, Mr. Powell.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Some of the things that the county is concerned about, excuse me, that talk about parks and libraries and all these things. I hear these same arguments with Senate Bill 400, which would allow deputies and, you know, the union police to bargain for their own for safety equipment. And I hear these same kind of arguments that, gee, if you allow somebody to do that, then you'll be taking away this county. You'll have to lay somebody else off. I mean, it just seems a little inconsistent. Right? Mm-hmm. Anybody could answer it, Mr. Collins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barker. The purpose of this bill is to avoid exactly that potential. And another in the county analysis that Representative Krieger gave me, they point out the fact that this would free up, in many cases, the county general fund monies for those other services. So, again, that's why it would be in partnership with the commissioners, can't run over them. In the current law, and we're not changing that portion of the law.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Paul, I'm just looking at the bill here. It says, starting off on page 1, master plans and service districts may be established as provided by this chapter regarding, and then we go over to page 2, and in line 5 it says law enforcement services, and then we're adding in line 9 sheriff services. What's the difference?
Mr. Chairman, Council Taylor, I believe that Representative Olson mentioned in his initial remarks that the sheriff has responsibilities that go beyond what might be considered traditional law enforcement services, such as search and rescue, certain civil procedure responsibilities in the law that other law enforcement agencies do not have. And again, based on another county council's read, it was thought that that could be put in the law to make sure that in those cases there wouldn't have to be a bifurcation of funding and funds come from the county general fund for these services as opposed to all sheriff services.
So, Mr. Paul, if you follow this process and procedure and file the petition for sheriff services, would the funds raised be just limited to sheriff services and not be able to be spent on law enforcement services?
Mr. Chairman, Councilor Taylor, sheriff services include law enforcement services.
No further questions.
Mr. Chair, if I have one more, maybe Sheriff can answer me. What's going to keep the county then from saying, we're cutting you back, Sheriff, go out and get your own levy? I mean, I would be a little bit leery of that. Or if you get a levy, then they're saying, okay, we're going to take some money back out to the general fund because you got this money, and so that you would be, you know, net zero as far as any gain is. The public, by voting for that, would want to enhance your program. What would keep the county commissioners? Just the public pressure, or?
Well, Chairman Pearson, I'm Sheriff James Dotson, Lincoln County. Representative Barker, if I were permitted to maybe give my comments, that might answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
If I may, and if not, please ask.
We've kind of gotten, I think, segued a bit here. Representative Olson was giving us an introduction, and then we were going to go on to the rest of the panel, and we got into some questions maybe before we should have. Representative Olson, do you need to excuse yourself?
Or I am.
We'd be happy to have you here if you can stay with us, but if you need to move elsewhere, and if there are no questions for you, maybe we could hear from these gentlemen and then put questions to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Representative. Okay, Mr. Powell and Sheriff Dotson, and whatever order you choose.
Okay. I've already.
Chairman Pearson, members of the committee, I've introduced myself. Thank you very much for this opportunity. It is a pleasure to be here with you this morning. On behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, I would like to offer some comments and some thoughts. Many years ago, this legislative body embarked on a quest to find adequate, sustainable, dedicated funding for the Oregon State Police. Some local authorities around the state have also sought a funding source for county law enforcement. Local option levies have provided very limited relief to a handful of counties, but have failed to provide sustainable funding. The current law allows special districts to be formed for law enforcement, but how many exist today? If the current law is adequate, why are there only two examples of a county law enforcement special district in Oregon today, and one of them a very recent event? 10 years ago, Clatsop County voters approved a rural law enforcement district that provides approximately 70% of the sheriff's funding. This special district stabilized funding for the sheriff's office and is credited with being the sole reason the sheriff's office has been able to engage in effective long-range planning that has met the county's public safety needs over the past decade. The Deschutes County Sheriff introduced the idea of a sheriff's taxing district 2 years ago. He led that campaign and won the support of the voters last year. The commissioner supported the sheriff, his idea, and efforts by providing encouragement and understanding. Both of these instances are examples of partnership, cooperation, and most importantly, success. Recently, Associated Oregon Counties Council expressed concerns about this bill. The first concern was about the term sheriff services. The recommendation is to amend Section 1 to include a broader and more comprehensive definition in a category called public safety. This would include juvenile, animal control, community corrections, prosecution, emergency services, and possibly more. We disagree. There is a history of public safety levies not being supported by voters. Sheriff services are specific to sheriff's offices. We believe that if you want different results, you have to change what you've been doing. This recommendation is nothing more than doing what has already failed to produce desired results. Citizens have demonstrated they are not interested in supporting a potpourri of county services with specific tax measures. However, there is a history of voters supporting specific services with specific tax measures. We have no objection to defining sheriff services. However, those services vary from county to county. Some sheriff's offices include parole and probation, jail health services, emergency services, dispatch services, SWAT, forensic services, crash investigation teams, major crime units, and animal control. Services common to sheriffs include search and rescue, jails, inmate transport, courthouse security, civil process, and enforcement. Some commissioners are apparently concerned with the loss of their power should the sheriff be authorized to petition the voters. This concern has been expressed even though the commissioners retain control over the process after the voters have been petitioned. Nothing changes from that point forward. Another concern expressed at the same recent AOC meeting was of sheriffs in running the process and putting the Board of Commissioners in difficult political positions. I'll not comment on how this statement sounds other than it is not the intention of this bill. The idea for House Bill 2768 was born out of a Lincoln County budget process in 2004 when it was apparent that county general fund revenues were unable to provide adequate and sustainable funding for county law enforcement. I enjoy a great relationship with our Lincoln County commissioners. My point in mentioning this is that this idea was not the result of a failing partnership. In the same AOC meeting, council was credited as saying that a sheriff's special district could relieve the county general fund of some sizable costs. That is correct. With the imminent threat of federal timber revenues being discontinued and demands for services outstripping county general funds revenues, how will we adequately fund the protection of our citizens? ORS 206-010 defines sheriff as the chief executive officer and conservator of the peace of the county. It is logical to conclude from this definition and other constitutional and statutory authorities which frame the expectations of our citizens that House Bill 2768 is an opportunity for state and local officials to demonstrate their commitment to providing for the safety and security of their citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff. Should we hear from, I wonder if we should hear from Mr. Powell and then take questions to the two of them. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in the line of questioning pretty much allowed me to give the testimony I was going to give.
Okay, very good. Well, then Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm getting my hands around what this bill would allow the sheriffs to do in the county. One of my concerns sitting here is understanding, and I think I hear some of my peers ask this question a lot. If we are focused on public safety, and in this case the sheriffs and what they do, I think it's really important that we take into consideration the whole public safety system as we move something forward. And I'm not sure this is a question more than it is a statement. Maybe it is a question. The fact that if we have sheriff services, law enforcement that are able to go out and do their job, my concern is at the county level now we have DAs and prosecution and other things that need to be there, to jails, all those things to make sure the probation, the drug and alcohol treatment that are part of a whole system. Can you talk a little bit about that and maybe some of the concerns versus a power loss that is in your statement versus some of the concerns that maybe we're not looking at the whole picture as we move forward in this bill?
Chair McPherson, Representative Cameron, your comment is very appropriate, and that needs to be considered. The Lincoln County has an experience I've talked about, and there are others, but of attempting to pass special option levies for law enforcement services, which included juvenile, the district attorney's office, and corrections, as well as the sheriff's office. They failed. There have been two attempts. And the people made it very clear that it was too much in one package, that they felt suspicious of how that would be controlled and managed. In conversations with commissioners in Lincoln County, the idea of the commissioners made it very clear that they were more supportive, or that they were very supportive of being specific to sheriff services. that by taking the sheriff funding out of the general fund would allow them then to consider those other services as well, what needs to occur with those agencies to assist them. Currently, they don't have that choice. Now everybody shares that limited county general fund pie, and there's just not enough to go around to meet the needs of the people.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, again, John Powell representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I think Representative Cameron has raised a very good point, and that's another reason for this bill coming forward. It does no good for a law enforcement officer to put their life on the line if you can't prosecute who they pick up, no doubt about it. It does no good for that same officer to put his life or her life on the line if you don't have a forensics lab to do the lab work. Law enforcement and public safety is a continuum, no doubt about it. The funding sources, however, are not. They come from various sources, and each of those sources has their own problems. The state general fund has its problems. The county general fund has its problems. The cities have their problems. This piece will allow, as Representative Olson said, one more arrow in the quiver to try to keep that continuum in place. I remember many, many years ago reading in the newspaper that a Lane County Sheriff's deputy was transporting a home invasion burglar to the county jail. And this burglar was from Vancouver, Washington. And he started asking the deputy a series of questions about his place of work. He had read in the paper, the Portland Oregonian, that Lane County did not have any rural sheriff services. So he moved his operation to Lane County because he thought he couldn't be arrested. And he was a little upset to find out that a deputy had strayed out into his work area. Those are the kinds of things that we want to try to avoid, and I think counties want to try to avoid. And again, this is not an attempt to take over anybody's authority, but to keep that continuum of services together, as opposed to having one more place where it's not working.
Representative Bonamici, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope somebody can enlighten me, because in Sheriff Dotson's written testimony, he talks about Clatsop County and Deschutes County and how they've been successful, and they've been successful without House Bill 2768. So maybe I'm missing something, because if they were successful in funding their sheriff's offices, then why do we need the bill? And then I have a second question, but I can wait on that.
Chair McPherson, Representative Bonamici, very good question. Why has it only been that there are two examples when the statute's been in existence for decades? And it goes back to partnerships. It goes back to the political will, first of all, to take a tax measure. It takes also the credibility of the people involved in that process as well. You have a sheriff who provides specific services. People understand that they have one budget that they're concerned with. If the current law was so, if it was an adequate law, if it covered what needed to be covered, why are there only two examples? And one just a recent, I'm turning your question around, but it would seem that there should be 36 good examples, not just two. Something hasn't worked. Something isn't working. This is an opportunity to try something different that may have success and that we believe will have success. It's not the answer for every county, but at least it's another tool.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My other question, and I look forward to hearing some explanations from other people about why they think there haven't been more, which I think will probably be pretty complex. My other question has to do with something that Mr. Powell said in response to a question about how sheriff services includes law enforcement services. So I'm, again, a little confused about why there's a suggestion to add sheriff services when we already have law enforcement services. If in your opinion, Sheriff Services includes law enforcement services, because I think that's going to create some confusion about overlapping responsibilities and rights.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, the law is replete with duties and assignments for the sheriff. And as the testimony you were given, the statute says that the sheriff is the chief executive law enforcement personnel in a county. I think it's clear from statutory references and others that the duties of the sheriff are broader than a general law enforcement agency. For example, they're required to provide security services for the courts statutorily, and other law enforcement agencies are not. So they do search and rescue services. They deliver subpoenas and several functions that other law enforcement agencies do not and are not required to perform. And again, you're a lawyer. The recommendation to do this came from a lawyer.
Thank you. Just a follow-up comment. Never mind.
Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of following up on Representative Barker's comment earlier, the tax levies that would be put up after this is into place, would the norm be to get the full funding for the entire office from this, or would you still be using a mix of dollars with general fund? And then because these counties are having problems, a lot of our rural counties, if they do back out general fund money out of the sheriff's office, I think it's going to leave you flat. And I didn't know how you were going to deal with that.
Chairman Pearson, Representative Krieger, very good question. It doesn't change the local discussions, the debates, and decisions that have to be made when a decision is to move forward with a special tax district. It doesn't change anything that exists today. And those decisions would be made locally. There'd be discussions with cities who have their law enforcement services, city police, who do not have the authority of sheriffs, by the way, they different services, whether to participate or not. And if they were to participate, at what level would they participate? Those discussions would have to take place. Obviously, the discussions with the commissioners to take a look at compression, to consider everything else that has to be considered today. This doesn't change any of that. That still would take place. And then those decisions made locally. And you may have 36 different examples around the state if all 36 counties decided to do something.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I might respond as well. I think, Representative Krieger, your question is a good one. There would be two reasons to go forward with something like this. First, as in the Lane County example that was given to you previously, would be maintenance of effort, not growth or expansion. And that would most likely be the case in most counties. It would be an effort to maintain a current service level or perhaps add slightly. The other would be if there are serious problems in a county, gangs or some other reason to add to services, then that might be part of a program as well. But this effort would not necessarily be used to expand the services, but to maintain existing levels of service.
Representative Flores, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Powell. I think that that statement is very, very important for us to grab, especially in light of the fact that the federal timber tax payments are going to be cut off from counties. Mm-hmm. And Sheriff Dotson, thank you. I think that your observation of the citizen voting history is very accurate in that oftentimes how often do we hear that law enforcement levies go down flaming, but if you are tying a specific purpose to a levy, it often has a better chance. So I think that's a very key piece. And a question for either one of you, as I'm reading this, just as Council Taylor had actually pointed out on page 1, line 6, that master plans and service districts may be established. So this entire list doesn't mean they are mandated to be established, that this is certainly permissive, and in light of some of the extreme circumstances that counties are going to be facing, this is an opportunity to help cover some of the potential shortfall. Is that a clear understanding?
Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, absolutely. That's very accurate.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being a forward-looking bill, based on what Representative Flores just said, I'm just trying to imagine how this will look to the citizen in, here in Marion County, for example. Would we be seeing moving forward, for example, on a ballot sometime, a specific measure like we just saw for fire here in our fire districts, a specific measure that would basically be a levy in the ballot that would say this is the amount that we're asking for sheriff services, and how specifically would that be described? As I'm reading all the material that I've been given, we're saying that sheriff services have been defined, but yet some people here say it's not specifically defined. So as a layperson, citizen, as I'm reading that ballot, what would I see and what would I be thinking?
Chairman McPherson, Representative Cameron, another excellent question. Yes, to answer your question, there would be an effort. The voters would be presented with something once it was approved by the Board of Commissioners. There would be an explanation. Sheriff services would be defined. There are statutory requirements that dictate how a tax proposal is to be presented. It's a template, as you, if you would. It would be very, 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 very specific what those sheriff services are and what those rates would be for the different areas. When Deschutes County's example, there is a different rate for those people who live in the rural part of the county as opposed to those people who live in Bend and Redmond, and that is stated in the bill or in the measure.
Follow up, if I may, but it would just say for sheriff services. Is that the only detail that I would get?
The sheriff services would be defined. There would be a definition. We talk about enforcement, the jail, the civil process, search and rescue, whatever services are being provided by that sheriff's office that the commissioners and the sheriff had agreed to include in that proposal would be listed in there. Now, for example, with Representative Krieger's idea, question Representative Barker, about would there be a mix of tax levy dollars with general fund dollars. That's the case with Clatsop County. With their rural law enforcement special district for the sheriff, it only provides approximately 70% of the funding for the sheriff's office. The remainder of that comes from the county general fund and other grants. So there is, they have worked out a formula and a sharing of the funding for the sheriff's office. So there's that latitude, again, that is a local decision to determine what are they going to ask the voters to support.
One more. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could it be as specific as adding X amount of patrol, sheriff patrol, to the roads?
Chair McPherson, Representative Cameron, yes. I'm sorry I failed to respond to that part of it. It would also talk about what that funding would do with the sheriff's office, whether it would be a maintenance of current services or an increase.
Thank you.
Barker.
And I don't know if you saw the letter from Washington County from the commissioners. Okay. In there, if you could remind us, it would be helpful. They talk about all the other obligations they have, and if the jurisdiction is in compression, then this would actually reduce other things. Can you talk about explain what is compression? Remind me what compression is. Mr. Powell, before
you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Barker, the issue of compression would be faced under existing law with the creation of a law enforcement district or a sewer district or any other district. In those cases, the commissioners and the sheriff most likely would not proceed with a measure simply because they too would suffer from compression. And that happens with levies from time to time. I believe in Linn County several years ago, the sheriff had a 3-year levy passed but due to compression, they were unable to collect a substantial amount of it. So compression is an issue under existing law, and if somebody came forward with a special district, those discussions take place with all the taxing districts and the county commissioners.
Okay.
So that wouldn't change under this measure.
Thank you. And an additional question would be, and once you get it voted in, you'd have that, it'd be like a service district, and it's there. So you don't have to go back every year. I mean, that will be there pretty much from then on, unless somebody took it off. Would that be correct?
Chair McPherson, Representative Barker, you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, the compression issue is the competing interest of the various, whether they are established or would ever be established, special service districts for that pie that Sheriff Dodson funding mechanisms had referred to.
Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, that's also correct. Again, it goes back to a local decision. That's why this would not be an option for every county because of compression issues that exist. That's why it would be a local decision, local control, controlled by the Board of Commissioners.
I'm still hung up on some of the mechanics about how the bill would work. When I see the creation of a special district, it suggests creating a new and different geographic terrain than is already in existence. And yet I think maybe what I'm hearing is that the special district, at least under some applications of this, if it were to become law, would be the entire county. Do you envision, and maybe this is best put to Mr. Powell, that the special district, the petition to create a district, would be the entire county, or would it be the portion that's outside of cities that are already served by law enforcement services? What do you envision?
Mr. Chairman, that would be part of the petition as to what service areas and areas that the district would apply to.
And I
believe Sheriff Dodson indicated, was it which county where the tax rate is actually different in cities than it is in the rural areas.
Okay. And is it inherent in the creation of the district then that the petitioner would have the right to then propose to the residents of that district a tax increase applicable to their property? I mean, is there elsewhere in statute then the mechanism by which some governing board of the district, the special district, would then decide what it is that goes forward to the property owners of the district?
Chair McPherson, it is in other statutes where it states the authority to go back to the voters for any increases or changes in those tax rates. That's already covered in statute. This bill doesn't address that.
And do those other statutes then have the governance structure for the district?
Correct.
So how is it envisioned in bringing this bill forward? What that governance structure is? Is there a board of the sheriff's service district for Lincoln County that would be formed as part of the petition that this is creating?
Chair McPherson, yes, the Board of Commissioners would make that determination. They could elect to be the governing board of that taxing district, or they could elect to appoint people to that governing board. It'd be a Board of Commissioners, as they have today.
But that power would still reside with the Board of County Commissioners?
Correct.
Okay. Any further questions? Then we'll excuse these witnesses and invite Bob Wolf, Polk County Sheriff Board.
You do not have to be the same governing body.
Mr. Chairman, I've been ordered by a sheriff to stay here. Is that okay?
that's fine, Mr. Powell.
Chair McPherson, members of the committee, my name's Bob Wolf. I'm the sheriff of Polk County. I currently serve on the executive board of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, and I am also a past president of the organization. After listening to most of the testimony here this morning, I'm not sure that there's much more that I could add. However, I did want to just give you a brief synopsis of a local situation with Polk County. 2 weeks ago, we recently concluded our budget process, and it's up for final adoption in May. However, as a sheriff of Polk County, I represent five different budgets within the county. I have a patrol budget, I have a jail budget, I have a dog control budget, I have a emergency manager budget, because by order of the board, the emergency management is under the authority of the sheriff. And then I also have a Oregon State Marine Board budget. Those budgets take up 43% of the general fund of Polk County. With the loss of ONC timber revenues, the Polk County Sheriff's Office has taken a tremendous hit with the loss of ONC timber, if in fact it occurs, and it's looking likely that it will. As a result of that, it will reduce the Polk County Sheriff's Office Patrol Division down to the sheriff, lieutenant, and a couple of sergeants. I still will be maintaining a drug enforcement unit for the reasons that it just became active in January, and since January, as of yesterday, they've made 57 arrests for drug crimes that have occurred in Polk County. Taking and removing the people that are out there currently arresting drug users and drug dealers would end up putting more crime back on the street, because our patrol division has already seen a slight, very slight, reduction in some of our thefts that have been occurring in Polk County, which is generally associated to identity theft and drug users. The reason that I bring this to your attention is the fact that I've had a discussion with the chair of the Polk County Board of Commissioners. I actually had that discussion yesterday, in which I wanted to discuss with him this particular bill and any concerns that my Board of Commissioners might have. And in having that discussion, it was determined that this, if this bill were to pass, it would still be a partnership with the Sheriff's Office and the Board of Commissioners. I can't just go out on my own and try to establish any sort of a special taxing district under the authority of this bill, if it becomes law, without the support and endorsement of the county commissioners, because if I were to do so, they still have to have some oversight as to the sheriff going out and obtaining such a thing. So I've heard discussion here or testimony this morning regarding the law enforcement services, and again, I would just want to reiterate, I have five different budgets, and the fact that my jail budget is larger than my patrol budget because of the fact that I operate the jail. This local law enforcement does not operate a jail. Only the sheriff of the county operates jails, and as well as search and rescue operations and our civil divisions. Local law enforcement does not have authority or operation over any of those. So I just wanted, the testimony's gone on this morning here, so I just wanted to give you a brief synopsis at a local level. The Polk County Sheriff's Office is going to take a significant hit and services will be reduced, and our Board of Commissioners would look to me, and we will work as a partnership as to whether or not, if this bill were to pass, I would seek a special taxing district and allow some of the general fund money to remain for other services within Polk County, or whether the county commissioners would make a decision to reduce that general fund money for some of those services and allow me to go out as a special taxing district and then add more money back to the taxpayer. So, Chair McPherson, if there's any questions.
Thank you, Sheriff Wolf. Any questions? Representative Krieger.
Maybe a question, but you know, it's been my experience that I think for the most part, statewide, the sheriff's offices and the county commissioners work pretty close hand in hand on a whole lot of things. Who are your county commissioners?
Chair McPherson, Representative Krieger. Chair of our board right now is Tom Ritchie, and Commissioner Mike Probst, and Commissioner Ron Dodge.
Okay. My cousin, Mike Probst. I think you have the biggest county commissioner.
Yes, I believe we do.
Any further questions for Sheriff Wolf? Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you, sir.
Paul Snyder from Pacific Oregon County.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I'd like to say at first, Mr. Chair and members, that we do work closely with the sheriffs. We are partners with each other at the very, very basis of what we do, and that will continue regardless of what happens, I hope, with House Bill 2768. The position of the Association of Oregon Counties with respect to this bill is, first of all, we don't have a problem with adding additional sheriff services to the authority for county service districts to be formed. If there are some that the sheriffs don't think are covered by the phrase law enforcement, then we could add others in addition to that. We oppose the provision that allows the sheriff to short-circuit the petition process with respect to this bill. And we would recommend that if this bill were to move forward, that two changes occur. One would be to take out that provision that would allow the sheriff to directly petition and amend the bill so as to modify the definition of law enforcement to provide for the additional services that the sheriffs believe are not covered by that phrase. I need to explain a little bit about my understanding of 451 county service districts and how they're formed and how they operate. A 451 district is a separate legal entity from the county. It's not the same thing. And it has its own specified powers and duties. It has the authority in the formation process to obtain a permanent tax rate if the voters approve that at the same time as the district is formed. It's important also to understand that I talked with one county council with respect to these distinctions over the last couple of days, and this is my understanding about what he said, that his understanding is that a permanent tax rate has a higher standing under compression than does a local operating levy or a local option levy. Now, local option levies are often used, as the sheriffs who preceded me have said, for law enforcement and other special services. One aspect of a local option levy is that it's short term. It can't last more than a specified length of time, and after that you have to go out for another one or some other way to obtain the money that you're looking for. In compression, a permanent tax rate takes precedence. So in other words, if you're bumping up against the $10 maximum for all local government services, as to each individual property that's covered by that, and it would be different, of course, depending upon what other districts, cities, other taxing entities have levied. When you're in compression, you're bumping up against the $10 limit, the permanent tax rate would take precedence over the local option levy. So if, for example, you have a local option levy for whatever, the understanding that was expressed to me is you might have a proposed 451 district that would levy $8 a thousand, just hypothetically speaking. And other entities that have that permanent tax rate together, let's say together they constitute $8 a thousand. And there are also $6 per thousand in local option levies in that same geographical area. The understanding that was expressed to me was that the permanent tax rate entities would continue at full steam, whereas the local operating levies would diminish until you get back down to the $10 limit. So, for example, if you had a local option levy, which in one county exists, the one that I talk with, providing law enforcement services, and you also had a 451 district also providing law enforcement services, then the 451 district would take precedence when you push up against compression, against a $10 cap, and the other levy would diminish to bring it back within the $10. As to including sheriff services. Like I said, we don't have an issue with that, but we would recommend to you, and this is where the chart comes in that I've passed out to the members of the committee. This chart identifies a number of different systems that you and we are jointly responsible in terms of service delivery. There's health and community services, public safety, economic development, natural resources, recreation, transportation, land use, other community services, and there are others that are not listed on the chart. But you'll notice that each one of these separate systems, let's just take a look at public safety since that's the one that we're talking about here. Public safety system is a system that operates when it operates correctly as a system. If you take one piece of it and overfund it in terms of its proportionality to the rest of the system, you wind up with a system that can't handle the workload that's coming from that place in the system. And I'd like to give you an example about a conversation that I overheard a few years ago between a district attorney and someone else in the criminal justice system. Was not a member of the local justice system. And they were having a conversation about the cost of indigent defense, which has been an issue for the legislative assembly for a long time. And the view expressed by one of the people in this conversation was that, well, if you want to contain indigent defense, what you really need to do is squeeze the district attorney, because if the district attorney can't prosecute, then you're not going to have that many lawyers that you're going to appoint. The district attorney responding to that argument, and I'm kind of dating the conversation now, said, you know, I got to tell you that the decision by the city of Portland to hire 100 new police officers has a much more profound effect on the cost of indigent defense than any of the charging practices that Mike Shrump might have. And his point was to say that it's a system, that a piece of the system that gets funded disproportionately to the rest of the system makes the rest of the system operate ineffectively. That same district attorney said that his view of the function of the role of the district attorney is that it's the neck of the hourglass. So it really doesn't make that much difference, he said, how much sand there is on top and how much sand there is below. Basically, you've got to deal with the neck in order to get the whole system to process functionally. And that's why we would suggest that if the committee were to move forward with adding services that the sheriff now provides, that you do it in the context of the law enforcement district, because the law enforcement district covers the broader base of the system. It can pick up prosecution, it can pick up jails, it can pick up law enforcement. If we want to add search and rescue, that's fine. If we want to add civil process servers, that's okay too. But the point of this is to say that if you're going to go to the voters for purposes of creating a balanced system, you have to create the balanced system in the whole package, not just a piece of it. And this speaks also to the issue of whether the sheriff should be able to directly petition the Board of Commissioners without going through the process of taking it to some voters first. And that is to say that whether it's the sheriff or anybody else in the system, you could use the same argument and apply it to the district attorney. But we're dealing now with the sheriff. If the sheriff becomes center stage, comes directly to the Board of Commissioners and says, I want to create a sheriff services district and I want you to decide now, up or down, are you going to do it or are you not going to do it? The Board of Commissioners has to make the choices trying to balance all components of the system here, and they do it in a context where the sheriff is center stage. And the difficulty with that process is that if you go forward with it, you wind up with the potential for an unbalanced system. Another aspect to this that's difficult to work through is that, and I think the sheriff spoke to this issue in an appropriate way, and that is to say, if you go to the voters and you say, you want to create a sheriff's district, and the sheriff's district would provide for this level of law enforcement, this much for the jail, and this much for these other things as well, the voter's first reaction would probably be, well, aren't I paying for that now? And what are you going to give me that I don't get now in return for the additional money that I'm going to pay when you come in with the service district? And the response in the one county that I discussed this with was to say, well, this is what we're going to do. We provide 0.5 deputy sheriffs per 1,000 population in the unincorporated area of the county. If you approve this law enforcement district, we'll add another 0.5 deputies to the mix so that you get one deputy per 1,000. So that improves the amount of law enforcement services. It also includes and improves the number of district attorneys that you have to prosecute those offenders. It also can include juvenile department capacity so you can prosecute and deal with the kids that the law enforcement folks pick up. And it increases the capacity of the jail. It's basically addressed in the context of law enforcement as a system. And another aspect to this is that the Board of Commissioners, just like you, has to make decisions as to how you balance all the services that you provide. And we are the functional equivalent at the local level of you. We provide the health and community services, the public safety, economic development, transportation, land use, and other community services. And we have to provide all those services in balance, not just within each system, but one system against the other system. And once again, with the difficulty that we see with the sheriff coming forward saying, let's create a sheriff services district, is that it forces the focus on the one silo within the one system to the detriment of the other systems and the other parts of the same system. And we don't think that's constructive. We don't think it's a good idea. I think Mr. Powell said it would be foolhardy for the sheriff to propose a district without the support of the county commissioners. It's important to recognize that under both Chapter 451 and 198, which is the basis for creating these districts, that authority exists now. Anybody can come to the Board of County Commissioners and ask the board to take it directly to the voters, and you don't have to go through a petition process to do that. You can do that now. Another comment I'd like to just give a different perspective on would free up the county general fund for other services. Once again, I think that becomes an issue with the voters, because if you go to the voters and you say we're going to create a sheriff services district and we're going to provide the same services we provide now, maybe enhance them, maybe not, then it would seem to me that if I were a voter in that context, I would say, well, what are you going to do with the money that you free up? You're presenting me with an option about something that you're going to do that you already do, and that's going to free up this other money. I may not like the choices that you make about the money that you free up. Sheriff services include law enforcement district. I think kind of the opposite of that is an important feature to this, that law enforcement districts include a lot more than just sheriff services. And I've covered that point, but it's very important, I think, in the context of something like this to recognize that these other pieces, these other services within the system that are covered by a law enforcement district are important to the functioning of the system. It's not healthy, it's not good for law enforcement deputies to go out and arrest people if we don't have the capacity within the rest of the county general fund budget to prosecute them, or to deal with them at the community corrections level, or to deal with them if they're kids within the juvenile department context, or if they have addictions to deal with their addictions in the health department or in the mental health department. It's all part of the same system, and if you want to deal with the problem effectively, you have to deal with the whole problem, not just one piece of it. Mr. Chair and members, I think that's all I have. I very much appreciate your indulgence.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. Are there any questions for this witness? Yes, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schneider, I asked Sheriff Dotson about his examples in his testimony about Clatsop County and Deschutes County and how they seem to make things work under existing law. And I wonder if you could offer your opinion about that, because his response was, well, why are there only two counties who have made the sheriff's taxing district idea work? Do you have some opinion about that, sort of in a big picture sense?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I think the implication there is that there's something functionally wrong with the other counties that don't do that, and I'm not sure that's true. In other words, we have functioning systems that are in balance across the state. In some contexts, it appears that it would be appropriate to do this in other places, like the one county that I was mentioning to you provides enhanced law enforcement services as a function of a 451 district. The county general fund pays for a basic level of service, and the county brought to the voters the option of saying, well, if you want enhanced law enforcement in this area of the county, we'll provide that to you if you approve this. And that same 451 district, by the way, is a law enforcement district. And so, once again, it covers the whole gambit of the taxation on the entire system. So it picks up the additional patrol for the sheriff, and it picks up the additional prosecutors, and it picks up the additional juvenile department aspects to it, and the additional jail capacity that was needed as well. So it provides the system in balance, but it also gives the voters the choice of getting the enhanced services. So the voters can say in that context, well, okay, now I know. This is the level of service I'm getting now, and this is what you're going to tax me more for, and this is what I'm going to get in addition to what I pay for now.
Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Snyder, your bottom line is AOC is against this, but you then offered a proposal to consider putting sheriff services in law enforcement districts. That would not work in Deschutes County because we have law enforcement districts in Sun River and Black Butte that would not want to have the sheriff's district's sheriff responsibilities. And I think I would endorse Sheriff Dotson's comments that local options have not worked. We went through that many years in Deschutes County, and we were successful finally in getting permanent funding. We have two different, it's complicated, so I was trying to explain to the sheriff or to the chairman. In Deschutes County, you have an overall taxing rate for the sheriff's services, including Sun River. But then Ben, Redmond, Sun River, and Black Butte pay less services for the sheriff's law enforcement responsibilities countywide. So you balance out because you're paying taxes for Bend and Redmond and Sun River and Black Butte for law enforcement. So the sheriff has two taxing districts, two taxing systems, the ones that have the law enforcement services themselves and then the ones that don't pay a higher rate. And it's, you know, we voted on that last year, and it was passed pretty strong in Deschutes County.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, I'm counting heavily on the remarks from Sheriff Dotson, which is also my understanding that by providing basically expanding the laundry list of services that can be authorized under the umbrella of law enforcement doesn't imply that you have to use them all in the same place. So, for example, in your example, you may choose to exclude one or more of the services. Maybe the civil process service aspect is not something that the people in Sun River or Black Butte would want, but they might want something else. So I'm hopeful that even though they may not choose, or it may not work in Deschutes County to choose every piece on the menu, there may be some pieces on the menu that would be beneficial.
Further questions? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, I'm going to ask the same question I asked before then. So in your scenario with a law enforcement district, could the same thing be put on the ballot of saying, if I'm just going back to the person sitting out in their house looking at the ballot, law enforcement district, a levy, and if you check yes here, we're going to add X amount of patrol in this particular area? Could that be described, and that's what I'm voting on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I believe that's true. Now, some of the sheriffs in the room who have probably had direct experience with that could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's correct. I think you described pretty carefully and pretty vividly what the services are that you get in return for the tax base that you create.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, and thank you, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you.
Next on our list is Jack Crabtree.
Chairman Pearson, all the Sheriff Dotson and Sheriff Wolf pretty much covered my...
Very good. Thank you, Sheriff Crabtree. Then finally, Brian DeLashman.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Brian DeLashman, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. Just so you'll know, a number of our members, in fact, our deputy sheriffs around the state. And quite frankly, you saw how I marked, that's the first time in 28 years that I put a question mark as to whether or not I supported or opposed the bill. Our association doesn't have a position yet. I came to kind of learn as you learned. But I did want to reserve the right, as it circles back around, to not be accused of not showing up in the first hearing. So with that, the only concern in reading this that I had, and it appears like it's not a concern that's valid, is could you have an existing service district, like a water service district, a diking district, all of a sudden say, we're going to provide sheriff services, and either be in competition with the existing sheriff services. It appears that that's not the case in here, but I'll do a little more research. But I did want to reserve the right, let you know I was here listening, learning as you were learning, and if need be, come back later. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Lashman? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here who wanted to be heard on House Bill 2768? Mr. Powell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your indulgence. Again, John Powell with the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I'd simply respond to League of Oregon County's testimony and the chart, saying, again, please understand with this bill, the sheriff can go out and get the posse together and a petition and spend a few weeks politicking around the county and bring exactly the same issue to the board of county commissioners. So again, I think a little too much is being made out of the issue. The same set of questions can be put before the county commission today. It doesn't change any of that in terms of balancing the law enforcement effort, including prosecution. Obviously, the sheriff understands that very, very well, that it has to be a balanced system. And the county commissioners are still in control of the hearings and whether or not to put the effort on the ballot.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Powell, I'm not experienced in special service districts, and so I wonder if you could just explain the whole petition. What's the reason for the petition process? Because that, I think, is the bone of contention with this bill, is that it allows a shortcut to that process. So what is the purpose of the petition process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonamici, I think for the same reason we have an initiative and referendum system, it's a way that citizens can come together and petition their government. And it's a demonstration of that kind of popular support.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Powell, I think I need some clarification because by inference, Association of Oregon Counties has said that you can, under this theory of this bill, that there would be this arbitrary movement without consideration of the big picture. And what I'm understanding is that from the beginning that this is to be partnership and collaboration with the needs of the county and consultation with the Board of Commissioners. So in any context, is there something buried in here that I don't see that says that sheriffs could do this without working in partnership for the big picture needs?
Chairman Pearson, Representative Flores, it would be, again, foolhardy for a sheriff to try to run over the people who have the authority, not only over this election process and whether or not it gets to an election, but their future relationship in working together on issues. The sheriff, again, looks at the entire budget of the county, and this would be done more as an effort to make room for other services that have been mentioned heretofore, as opposed to running over somebody. That is not the intent at all of this measure. And again, in terms of something hidden here, we can do it now.
Thank you. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Powell, you say they can do it now through a petition process, but they can't do it now as a sheriff's special district. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cameron, sheriff's services is not currently in the statute.
Right.
And it could be done as a law enforcement district. The question that has come up in terms of an undefined term in the statute, what does that mean? Sheriff's services obviously mean the things that the statutes require the sheriff to do, and being the chief law enforcement agent of the county is one. They have civil responsibilities under the statutes, including civil delivery, and their statutes requires them to provide security services to the court, etc. So the statutes pretty much define the role of the sheriff. And in fact, our biggest problem with the bill on judgments a few years ago was the Oregon Law Commission thought the sheriff would like to have some interpretation in that law. We said, no, we want to be told what the sheriff's responsibilities are when it comes to that area of the law. So that's the reason sheriff services was added to the bill.
Go ahead. And I just want to make sure that I'm clear. So sheriff services added the bill, but we're also saying they don't have to go through a petition process. Is there any consideration of taking lines 21 through 20? If sheriff services came out of the bill, the consideration of allowing a law enforcement services to be inserted in section 4 so that it can bypass the petition process? What's that do?
I'm not sure, Representative Cameron. You're suggesting that in Section 2 you would put law enforcement services do not have to go through the petition process?
Well, I'm just saying there's two major issues that we're talking about here. One is allowing sheriffs to have special service districts. There's a reason for that. And the other issue is allowing them to opt out of having to go through the petition process to bring that forward. As you just explained, it's more for a public process to bring that forward, and if as leaders they think it should come forward and take it to the commissioners, commissioners can approve that. So I'm just saying the argument of, and I just want to know, because my question earlier was we could say under law enforcement services we're going to add X amount of sheriff patrol cars to this levy, and the voters would be able to vote on that. Was there any consideration of just giving law enforcement services the opt-out of the petition process?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cameron, to my knowledge, that was not discussed. And again, understand that the requirement in an election would be to specify what services would be delivered. And the notion that you put the whole array of services on a ballot and ask the people to vote for them, I think the voters have spoken on those. They tend to say no. And that's why being very specific usually is the only route to success, because the voters can understand what they're getting in return. Now, in terms of dropping sheriff services and applying this to all law enforcement service, I don't know what the association say to that.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And although Mr. Powell earlier identified me as an attorney, I am an inactive member of the bar, and nothing I'm saying should be construed as legal advice. However, I would like some help maybe from Mr. Taylor and Mr. Powell in interpreting this lines 21 through 26 on page 3, because it's my understanding from reading those that this would not allow the sheriff's services to bypass the entire petition process, but in fact only certain sections of it. And I was trying to read the statute while I was listening, which doesn't always work, but those three sections and that do not apply to the petition of a sheriff have to do with filing a prospective petition, the certain contents of the petition, and a security deposit. So the way I'm looking at this is that it isn't a complete bypass, it only bypasses certain sections, and I can't quite figure out which sections the sheriff's service would still have to comply with. So if somebody can help with that, I think that would help us understand why paragraph 4 is in there and what it would do.
So, Chair, members of the committee, this is an area that we don't often get into in this committee. I did read the bill. I did read the statutes and the ones in particular, and I have copies in front of me, and I believe that you also read them in the ORS. And 198-748, prospective petition for formation following content, that's the caption given to it. 198-750, content of petition proposing formation or change of organization. And then what's the other one?
Security deposit.
Security deposit, 170. Is it 149 economic? Whatever.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that.
Yeah.
Representative Bonamici, you should not apologize for your legal standing, because I think you've read it exactly the right way. In fact, it is just the petition, and even within the statutes that it exempts, it still requires the petition to include in 198.750 the descriptive answers to the section 1A to H. So it would still have to set out the nature of the proposal, whether the territory subject to petition is inhabited, uninhabited. All of those questions would still have to be answered in the petition. So the petition would be the same. The only thing that's exempted in this case is basically going out and getting the signatures.
If there are no further questions, then
thank you very much.
Excuse Mr. Powell. Obviously a complex bill, and I think it needs a little more reflection here. Committee, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2768, and we'll now open a work session on House Bill 2179. Council Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2179 comes to you from the Department of Human Services. Enables Oregon Department of Human Services to obtain criminal background information about individual without prior consent of or notice to the individual if the individual is either one alleged perpetrator of child abuse or neglect or resides in or frequents residence of alleged child abuse or neglect victim. Requires DHS to notify such individual after obtaining information if the investigation into child abuse or neglect continues. Adopts federal criteria for disqualification for post-child abuse caregiver within certain criminal histories. Chair, members of the committee, you have the -1 amendments in front of you, which basically remove that last sentence, adopt federal criteria, by removing Section 2 from the bill, Chair, members of the committee, and Section 3.
And, Council Toad, do we have someone from DHS here?
We do, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. I see Mr. Harry Gilmore sitting in the back with Mickey Cerise, who could probably give you some more.
Yeah, if one or both of those people could come forward and kind of remind us what was about what's happening here with these -1 amendments.
Chair McPherson, members of the committee, the amendment is just to modify the bill to take out a provision that we originally put in to accommodate a federal law change. And there's a work group that's being sponsored by the governor's office that is studying that federal law change, and we want to wait on making any decisions about any statutory changes in Oregon connected to this federal law change until the work of this group is completed. And so we're withdrawing that part of the bill. So essentially it'll leave that part of the statute as is.
Even though we're in work session, could you identify yourself for the record?
I apologize for that. I'm Harry Gilmore with the Department of Human Services.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. And actually, I found my notes here on when this came to hearing before, and it's consistent with what you just described. That is, that there was an overlap with some work that's going on and in a separate work group, and so the decision was made to remove this piece from the bill so that this deletion of the cross-reference to some U.S. code sections that you see, if you're looking at the bottom of the original bill, would be in line, page 2, lines 36 through 38, that deletion would not occur as a result of this bill. They're not speaking to that point. Committee, as you may recall, the purpose of this bill is to extend authority to obtain criminal background information on individuals who may have a connection or pose a threat to a child about whom an allegation of abuse or neglect has been made. There was some concern expressed in our original hearing about the, as indicated in the staff measure summary, about the vagueness of people who frequent a place of residence of an abused or neglected child. And so I suspect that that's probably the policy choice that's presented by this bill, is whether to extend that kind of authority to DHS that is tied to a standard that's more general like that. Is there any discussion of the bill? Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also recall that there was a concern, I believe, raised by Representative Cameron about people can get a criminal record checked and then never be notified. And we had some discussion about the timing that we can understand. I think I agreed with that we could understand that there may be a need to pull a criminal record on somebody if there's a suspicion, but that person would never be told that there was a criminal records check pulled on them. So that was another concern that we talked about.
Right. And I see in the staff measure summary, there's the part of the summary of what the measure does says that DHS is required to notify such individual after obtaining information if investigation into the child abuse and neglect continues. So the initial pursuit would not require the notification, so that in effect if it came out negative, then the person whose background information had been checked would never know that that had occurred.
Chair McPherson, I don't have in my notes, and maybe I just didn't write it down. Did we have Andrea Meyer or anybody from the ACLU testify on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I have those notes, and
oh,
she did.
You.
They opposed the bill with some of the questions about the people being swept into the system without their knowledge, expanded to other individuals who might reside or frequent in the facility where the investigation might occur, not just the alleged perpetrator, and then the purpose. And then the third piece was what happens to the records in case, in the event the case does not progress. And that was the question I wanted to ask, if that had been considered further.
There were no amendments pursued on that issue, and so the bill in its original printed form is what's before us. And as if I understand the effect of the bill, if there is a continuation of the investigation, then DHS would have an obligation to notify the person whose records have been pulled. But if there's no continuing investigation, then nothing further would happen. It would simply have checked out negative and nothing would proceed. Representative Bonamici.
Sorry. I think we may be about to say the same thing. I think the concern was what actually happens to the records. If there's a copy or something, DHS ends up with all these criminal records reports that they don't do anything with because they're not going further. So what do they do with them?
Let's ask Mr. Gilmore.
Representative Bonamici, Representative Flores, Chair McPherson, members of the committee. If we do not continue our investigation, in other words, the case is not assigned to a caseworker for someone to physically go out to the location where the abuse is alleged to have occurred, in that instance, there really will be no continuing record of the check. In other words, there are only certain individuals in a branch office that have the authority and the authorization to access the record, and they do that electronically via a web-based computer system that's a direct link to the law enforcement data system maintained by the state police. That information is viewed on a screen, and in some instances the information will be transferred onto a handwritten completed form that then may be shared with the caseworker. If no case record is created because the case is not assigned to a worker for further investigation, the only place that criminal record information will reside is in a locked and secure file maintained in the office, and the only reason that file is maintained is in the event of a state police audit, which occurs as a check to our system to make sure that we're only running checks for legitimate purposes and that we are storing records correctly. No one else in the office will have access to the information other than the one or two individuals that are trained and authorized to access the law enforcement data system. If the case is assigned and there is a continuing investigation, then a portion of the person's criminal record, if there is a criminal record, may be maintained in the case file. But if the check is run, there is no continuing investigation. The only place that information will reside is in this file that we maintain for audit purposes in the event of an audit by the state police.
Representative Barker.
And just to help clarify, in order to have access to that, you have to be trained. I mean, all police, you have to sign off, you understand the confidentiality. And when I run a check on Suzanne Bonamici, you could go over there to Leds and say, who ran the check on me? And they'll be able to tell you that it was me. So that there, it's very tightly controlled.
Here's a question. Are there DHS rules that govern this whole procedure?
Representative Bonamici, Chair McPherson, there are rules that govern this procedure. There are also statutory requirements under the statutes to deal with the law enforcement data system and the sharing of that information with partner agencies by the state police. There's also an agreement between the Department of Human Services and the state police with requirements around how information is handled. We're subject to all of those requirements, including the requirements in our own rules and policies.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recall that there was a point made during the public hearing, and I can't tell who made the point, about will an absence of criminal history perhaps lead to the DHS not pursuing something that they should? And so I think that was a concern that was raised. If you do the check and find that there is no criminal record, might you say, well, I'm not going to pursue this when, in fact, you may need to?
Representative Bonamici, Chair McPherson, the information that we obtain through running a criminal background check is just one piece of information that we consider in making a decision about whether or not to continue an investigation of child abuse. There are many instances where that piece of information will not be a determining factor. If there's a report of significant abuse, the investigation is going to continue and face-to-face contact is going to occur regardless of the content or the existence or non-existence of a person's criminal record. Where that information is more likely to play a significant role is where we get a report that does not suggest the need for a continuing investigation because of either the vagueness of the report or just a lack of information from the reporter. And then if a criminal history check is completed, revealing significant criminal history and in some cases recent criminal history, then that may be the deciding factor in whether or not to continue an investigation. It's not likely that a lack of a report would be a determining factor. First and foremost, the information that's provided by the reporter of the abuse is the primary thing that is considered in making those kinds of decisions.
Any further comments or questions? Well, committee, the overriding thrust of this bill is to give a tool to DHS to find out, I think, to check out whether there is a concern when there has been an allegation of child abuse or neglect, and do recognize as background that we have a fairly elaborate system of mandatory reporting of child abuse in the state, under which all of us as legislators, for example, are mandatory reporters. So DHS is getting reports in on, I assume, a regular basis. I'm looking at Mr. Gilmore, that there's a quite a frequent incidence of reports that come in from mandatory reporters of child abuse.
Chair McPherson, I did a little research on this because of the concern about those instances in which we are not sharing the information after running the check when we do not assign the case for further investigation. And I just looked at Marion County for a period of 1 year, and just looking at those reports that were closed at screening, these are not all the reports that were received in that time period, but just those that were closed at screening, there were 4,494 reports received during the year of 2006 just in Marion County alone, and that only accounts for those that were closed at the point of screening the call without being assigned to a caseworker.
So in one county alone, about 4,500 reports of child abuse, and I would imagine that one of the standard responses would be then to do a criminal background check on people who reside in that. It was based on the observation of what's happening at the residence. Would be to do a criminal background check on people who live in that residence or people who are identified as coming to that residence, and that this is what facilitates then that line of investigation. Am I understanding that right?
Representative Chair McPherson, members of the committee, that is correct. And I should also, I'd like to point out that the concern about the scope of the check and checking other people at the residence, not just the identified perpetrator in the report, that authority already exists under statute, and this bill would not change that. And we have the authority to do that now. The purpose of the bill really hinges on the ability to do it without providing prior notice of the check, which is what we are required to do, is to actually give written notice to an individual before we conduct a background check.
Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, yeah, thank you. 4,494. Do you know of those that were closed at screen, how many of those you received permission to do the background check?
Representative Cameron, Chair McPherson, we would not have received permission to conduct the background check on any of those 4,494 because of the fact that if the report was closed at screening, we would not have had an opportunity to give the written notification to the individual. We only do that when we make face-to-face contact.
Representative Cameron.
Just so I understand this, though, we're going from these 4,494 that you did not pull reports on because you didn't attempt to contact them because what you saw without a report allowed you to close it. We're going to go from that to allowing DHS to actually pull 4,494 reports, background checks, and provide no notification to those people that was ever done. Are these 4,494 closed at screening to the people? Are they notified the accusers? Are they notified that there was a case opened and closed?
You talking about the accuser, or are you talking about the accused?
The accused, because that's what we're talking about here.
Representative Cameron, Chair McPherson, those individuals would not be notified that a report was made. Typically, the only way a person knows that someone has reported an incident of child abuse, typically the only way the alleged perpetrator knows that that happened is if we begin an investigation. In other words, we go out and we interview the individual, and otherwise they would not know.
Representative Cameron. So if we're not pulling background checks on 4,494 people, and this is only going to be used in cases where they're hey, we think there's something here, let's pull this up as another tool, I don't understand why we can't at some point in time notify them that, by the way, we pulled a background check on you at some point in time. And I understand giving the caseworker the tool that they need to move forward to do their job in a safe way. But I also think we need to have some guard there that says, hey, we pulled a background check on you. Because now we're asking them to do it before we even do it. And I think a happy compromise would be to at least notify them that we did do it.
Representative Cameron, Chair McPherson, the primary concern in not including that requirement in this, what's proposed by this bill is really a workload change because of the number of reports that we receive on a daily basis, and many of those are screened out, as you can see from the data just from one county for 1 year. We simply don't have the human resources to perform that task right now, and also the cost of printing and providing that information, and this bill does not come with any fiscal impact. If we would have to look at the workload involved in that, and it's not something that, as I say, that was the primary reason for not including that provision and what's proposed.
A follow-up, if I may. Is there not a charge for a LEDS? Doesn't DHS get charged for a LEDS hit? Per hit,
I believe that we are charged for our access to the system, but I don't believe that we pay a case by case charge unless we're running a fingerprint based FBI check, and we would not be doing that under this statute. I think we have an agreement with OSP for access to their system. We don't engage their personnel in running these types of checks because it's all done electronically and it's our own personnel that are actually performing the task.
One more for me. You talked about a fiscal impact. Right now we're having to go out and physically get or take the time to get somebody to release a name to get a background check. I would think that that would take more time than actually getting a background check and then sending a letter and saying, by the way, we took a background check on you. I don't understand how it would cost more to do that than to what we're currently doing.
Representative Cameron, Chair McPherson, we're not actually going out and asking someone to release a name. These checks would only be run if we receive a report and they're people are identified in the report. We already have the identifying information in order to run the check. If we don't have identifying information as part of a reporter's account, then we wouldn't be running the check because we need that some form of ID, either we need the person's name and any other identifying information that the reporter provides in order to
run the check. I think Representative Cameron's point is that now it requires an advance permission or consent to have the criminal background check run, that going to a system that requires notification to those same people after the fact
shouldn't be more expensive. It should be. It might be equally expensive, but it wouldn't be more work.
Mr. Chair, I'm by virtue of what Representative Cameron's saying and what you just stated, on page 2 of the bill, friend 3A, the Department of Human Services shall provide written notice to the individual of the criminal offender record check when the Department of Human Services obtains criminal offender information under subsection 2 of this section and the investigation of the reported child abuse or neglect continues after the department obtains the criminal offender information. So I'm reading that to say that they are provided notice once an investigation has been conducted.
Right.
Or commenced.
The issue was whether it would be create a new fiscal impact to have a broader notification requirement than what the bill now states. And I think that was what Representative Cameron was focusing in on.
Maybe you just clarified. So,
can you tell me where your comments in
page 2, line 2 through 8.
I think the difference is that what Representative Cameron is suggesting would be to delete that 3B on lines 6 and 7 of page 2 and say that they need to give notification afterwards. So would it just shift the notice from before to after? This limits the notice to only if the investigation continues. And I think what Representative Cameron is suggesting is, why can't we just give notice to everybody rather than just the people whose investigation is continuing?
Representative Bonamici and Chairman Pearson, it's true that under the current statute, we are required to provide notification before the check is run. What this bill contemplates is running a greater number of checks than we run currently, because we would be under, if the bill were to pass, and we would have the authority to run the checks without providing that written notification. So we have the authority to run the checks in these cases that are now currently closed at screening, and that would be part of the information that we consider in making a determination about whether to go out. So it's a greater number of checks than we run now.
Mr. Chair, then I guess I'm having trouble grasping that as a policy matter, because if there's somebody who's out there who should be checked, you should do a criminal records check, shouldn't you be doing that whether or not you have to give notice before or after? What you're suggesting is that because you don't have to give notice, you're going to be doing more criminal background checks. And I guess I'm having trouble making that leap. I don't see this shifting the notice to after should change the number of criminal background checks.
Representative Bonamici, Chair McPherson, because now we're not able to run checks unless we go out and provide written notice, there are a number of cases. For example, in Marion County, with these 4,494 instances of reports of abuse that did not result in face-to-face contact with at the location where the report originated from, we didn't run checks in those 4,500 cases that under this law change, we may be able to run checks, so it's a greatly increased access that the law creates that we don't have now.
Representative Kump.
I'm really struggling with this bill because I'm very much with some of my colleagues. I really believe the need to have additional background checks. And the other part of that is, but I firmly believe in the notification process. The amount of these things that came through my office as a principal would be shocking to many people that are sitting here, or maybe not. But and the amount that did not have follow-up was what scared me because of various issues. But the reality is, when a person's notified, it's kind of like we're saying, hey, we're watching you. You better be not screwing up and playing with these kids anymore or beating them up, particularly after the fact. I mean, I know there's been times where we were asked, well, do you think this child is in severe physical danger if we, you know, do a background check and notify them? And that's a reality. But to not notify them at all is not good either. So,
Representative Krieger.
Well, if we hash this part over enough, I
think so, probably.
I, on page 1, A and B at the bottom, I'm looking at that, and I realize that's kind of a process, but it's not infrequent in domestic issues where there's a real conflict and people will make accusations knowing it's false for the purpose of trying to get the other partner into trouble and cause mischief and for them to have to hire an attorney. Does that person ever know who it was who made the accusation against them falsely? And then you're going to do if no, which I suspect it might be, then you would be doing a background check on that person. And that might be some of this 4,000 is something that you never went to the house to look at. It would seem inconsistent to have those two things in conflict with one another, where you just have to make the accusation and then that person has a background check done on them, whether they've done anything or not. Do they ever know?
Representative Krieger, Chair McPherson. Generally, the identity of a reporter is kept confidential, and we're required to do that by statute and by our own policies. And so a person may learn the identity of the reporter by other means, but it would not be because the identity of the reporter was revealed by the department.
So I don't know if we're talking about background check. Might be a little broad term. So you get somebody complains that I'm beating up my kid, so you run Jeff Barker. It comes up and you see who he is, clear record, and you don't proceed further because you don't have any more complaints. Is that the extent of the background check? The ones you notify people on, I assume you're really doing a follow-up on it, not just taking a look at the lead screen and then turning it off.
Representative Barker, Chair McPherson, that is correct. If we receive a report, we're going to look at all the information in the report, any other information, collateral information that's available, and then also if we run a criminal background check, we'll look at that information too. But you're correct. In those instances where we don't go out and continue the investigation, that's the extent of it. It ends right there.
Mr. Gilmore, maybe see if I understand. I thought I understood that the law now is that you couldn't even do what Representative Barker's describing without getting advance consent.
That's correct.
That you couldn't even go online and check and see, does this person have a criminal record?
I apologize. I was speaking hypothetically under the scenario that he was describing. If this law were to pass, we'd be running the background check at that point. We wouldn't be doing anything
but
this further.
You can't do that today. You couldn't check my name today.
That's correct. That's the purpose of this bill.
The purpose of this bill is to allow the DHS, when they get a report in that somebody is abusing a child, to go online and see, do they have a criminal background, and to do it, unless the investigation continues, to not ever tell them about it. And the kind of the point of tension here is whether they should have to at least tell them about it, that it was run after the fact, even if the investigation does not continue. That's the policy choice that I think we've got sort of in focus. And I think what I'm just kind of try to what I'm sensing from the discussion is that the committee is uncomfortable with the idea that there would never be any notice to the person who had that background check run, even if it came out negative and there was no continuation.
I'm not uncomfortable with that, because the police run checks on, you may never even know you're driving down the street and you've probably been checked and they'll know all about you and what you're doing.
Representative
Krieger. In this case, I would be uncomfortable, because the type of allegation it is against your character, you're mistreating your children or grandchildren or something. Okay. If someone's made that allegation, I want to know there's somebody in my neighborhood, my neighbor, my daughter, my worst enemy, my best friend, someone said something, and maybe then I need to pursue, too, if there is some other ways to be able to do that, to ascertain who was it that made that allegation. So I would be concerned.
Representative Krieger, Chair McPherson, if I may, that really gets to an issue that may go beyond the scope of this bill, which is the fact that we don't notify people when we receive a report of child abuse, generally, just because of the vast number of reports we receive, and a lot of them are not very credible. And as you say, people will make false reports. Sometimes they're describing something that occurred very accurately, but it simply doesn't constitute abuse, what's being described. As the data from Marion County shows, we receive thousands of reports every year, and many of those are not investigated, and it's just not our practice to make notifications to individuals when many of those reports for many of those reports, just because of those factors where it may clearly be a false report or an insubstantial report.
Sure. I'm comfortable with allowing them to do it, but I want them to notify everybody.
Representative Cameron.
Yeah, and just my colleague, Representative Barker, I am fine with the police checking my background. I mean, I'm trusting them and giving them some authority, and hopefully they're doing that. But this is a situation where my next-door neighbor can call because I wash my kid's mouth out with soap and for using foul language so they wouldn't go to the Oregon Youth Authority that we were hearing their budget on at a young age, and could be called, and they're pulling background checks on me, and I don't know about it. And I'm not going to go so far as Representative Krieger to find out which neighbor and, you know, go over and find that out, but it'd be nice to get notified from DHS that there was a background check pulled on me as a citizen of this state.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I saw this bill, I thought the whole point and purpose of it was to allow DHS the ability to do that criminal background check before, so that they weren't alerting accused person, and to allow them to pull it before. I didn't see it as a way to significantly expand the number of background checks. So it's a very different issue when you're saying, now they're going to just gonna pull background checks on a lot more people. And I share Representative Comp's concern that if it really is serious enough to pull a background check, even if the investigation doesn't go further, I can see a benefit in sending those people a letter saying, we're watching you, or we pulled your criminal record, which they do now. They just do it before.
But they don't do 4,000.
Committee, I think we've beaten this one around kind of extensively. I'm going to suggest that we close our work session without further action on the bill, and see whether there's some consensus here on something that would be of assistance to the department that would gather the sufficient support within the committee. If somebody's concerned about that or would like to offer up a motion.
I'm not sure DHS has the authority. I understand and I support what you're saying, but I don't think without going to another statute they're going to be able to give you the information you're seeking about your neighbor. Is that correct?
I don't want that.
Huh?
That's not the issue. Just that they get a background?
I just want to know that a background check was pulled on me.
That's right. And they do that now. They just do it before.
Right.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing further on this bill, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2179 and open a work session on House Bill 2233. Council Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2233 comes to you at the request of Governor Kulongowski for the Department of Revenue. Allows the Department of Revenue to record with the Department of Consumer and Business Services a lien for deferred taxes in a manufactured home. Clarifies that the department has a lien not only for the deferred taxes but also interest in the deferred taxes. Allows the Department of Revenue to record with the Secretary of State's office a lien for deferred taxes in a floating home. Chair, members of the committee, you have the Dash 1 amendments in front of you that was discussed at the last meeting, which basically removes the emergency clause, or I should say the effective date of 91 days after the end of session. Thus, the bill will become effective January 1, 2008, if the law is enacted.
Committee, I think this is a much easier bill for us. As you may recall, this bill has an emergency clause in it, and according to my notes, Juan Fraser from BCBS, Building Codes Division, asked that the emergency clause be removed, and so that is now before you in the Dash 1 amendments. And I think otherwise there was no opposition, and it's regarded as a technical agency bill.
Unless anybody wants to discuss it, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2233.
I should move the dash one.
Yeah, what dash ones be put into
House Bill 2233? Representative Barker moves the dash one amendments into House Bill 2233. Is there any discussion? Any objection? The dash one amendments are in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2233 to the floor to do pass, and I would think this would fit in the consent calendar.
Yes. So Representative Barker moves House Bill 2233 to the floor with as amended with the floor with a due pass recommendation for placement on the consent calendar. Any discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair McPherson?
Aye.
House Bill 2233 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation for placement of the consent calendar. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2233. Just a reminder to the committee that we are not meeting here in this room on Monday morning, but we do have a meeting at Aloha High School at 2 p.m. On Monday.
We have buses or?
Well, we were hadn't arranged anything because so many of the members live in the metro area.
We have a 6 o'clock caucus meeting.
No, we don't.
I think
no, that was changed to Monday.
Oh, Friday. Okay.
Friday.
I still got to get back here somehow.
Yeah. Wayne, I can write up.
How many are going to go?
I'm not coming back because I have a really heavy agenda.
I'm going to close the meeting so we don't have this transportation discussion on the record.